Welcome to the reading of the Quad City Times for today, which is March 20th. Thank you. All material heard on Iris is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. Your readers today are Patty Daniels and Pam Rhodes. Here's our first story from the front page.
City admin search process begins. Officials hope to have new admin begin by September. This article was written by Sarah Watson. Davenport hopes to have its next permanent city administrator in place by September. That's according to at-large Ald Kyle Grip, secretary of the city's executive search committee. Per city code, the committee is appointed by the mayor and made up of elected officials and members of the public. It is tasked with setting criteria and process to search for a new city administrator. The city's previous city administrator, Corey Spiegel, separated from the city with $1.6 million in lieu of a harassment lawsuit. Mallory Merritt, the city's chief financial officer, has been serving as interim city administrator since November. The city's code lays out a prescriptive process for how a new city administrator should be selected. First, the mayor must appoint an 11-member committee made up of 4 aldermen and 7 private citizens. Mayor Mike Mattson announced the committee members in early February. The committee met for the first time on February 9th, Grip told the council during its March 13 meeting. Mo Hyder, the regional vice president at Elite Casinos Resorts, the parent group of Rhythm City Casino, was elected as the chair, and Grip was elected as secretary. The committee put out a request for proposals from the national search firms February 12th, with a deadline of March 11 for search firms to respond, Grip said. The committee received 8 responses, Grip said, and will score the firms based on their experience and success with previous executive searches, completeness of their proposal, cost and references of other progress of other organization and firms, the firms they have worked with. The committee plans to do interviews with firms on April 3rd, and then recommend a firm to City Council. Grip said the goal would be for a search firm to appear at the City Council's April 17 cycle. The committee also will develop a profile of qualities and experience the committee wants to see in the next city administrator. If the search firm contract is approved by the council, the committee would then spend the next month working with the firm to recruit candidates. Mayor Mike Mattson said separate panels would interview candidates and would make recommendations to make the committee mayor. Grip said the executive search committee's goal is to bring back recommendations of the 3 qualified candidates to the mayor, who would then appoint the city administrator from those 3. The mayor's decision has to be approved by 2/3 of the city council, which would be at least 7 of the 10 members. Our goal continues to be to have a new city administrator on board by September 1st of 2024, Grip said during the March 13 council meeting. At the end of the day, we want a very solid, well-rounded candidate, Mattson told the Quad City Times and the Dispatch Argus, and that, people understand, we put a lot of effort into taking our time. It's a very purposeful, meticulous process. The search for the city's corporation council has fewer explicit instructions in city code, which only requires that the appointment be by recommendation of the city administrator with the approval of the mayor and 2/3 vote of the city council. Mattson said the committee included in its request for proposals an option for firms to process conducting both searches for city administrator and city attorney. The committee is looking for a firm to do both, but the priority is the city administrator, Mattson said. Mattson said he wasn't sure if any firms included both positions in their proposals. The city's previous city attorney, Tom Warner, left the city in December after Spiegel's departure was announced and officially retired in January. Brian Heyer has been serving as interim city attorney in the meantime. From the council, Mattson named at-large aide Alderman Kyle Gripp, 3rd Ward, Alderman Marion McGinnis, 1st Ward, Alderman Rick Dunn, and 7th Ward, Alderman Mahisho Lynch, to the committee. And for private citizens, Mattson named Kent Pilcher, president of Estes Construction and chairperson of the Quad City Community Foundation Board, Randy Moore, president of the Iowa American Water, Michelle Hargrove, Figge Art Museum executive director, Michelle Russell of Russell Construction, Mo Hyder, the regional vice president at Elite Casinos Resorts, the parent group of Rhythm City Casino, Kelly Grubbs, chief financial officer of Victory Enterprise and chair of the Riverfront Improvement Commission, Jim Lycum, a former state legislator. Hargrave announced last week she would be departing the Figge and the Quad Cities in April for a position at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts in Michigan. Mattson said he would look at replacing her on the committee. Last week, the council voted unanimously to delay a vote to ratify the mayor's appointments of Merritt to interim city administrator in November and Heyer to interim city attorney in January after a contentious meeting last week. Asked why the initial appointments did not come before the council, Mattson said many of the council did discuss this previously. Merritt's Memorandum of Understanding, signed in November, outlining her job, expectations for interim city administrator, and agreeing to pay her a $50,000 lump sum bonus to be paid in May, was signed by the 5 council members who chaired the committees at the time, but did not come before the council for public discussion or vote. In a similar fashion, on advice from outside counsel, the City Council ratified settlements to 3 former employees, including Spiegel, months after the agreements were signed. "It's good to have discussion now," Mattson said of the interim appointments. "I look forward to hearing more about it when I'm back." Mattson said he missed the previous 2 meetings because he was in Washington, D.C., meeting with federal officials, and in Chicago, meeting with bond rating agencies, and would be back Wednesday.
Local news. 2 charged in double homicide plead not guilty. Trial is slated to begin on April 22nd, written for us by Tom Lowy of the QC Times. The woman and man accused of murder in a January double homicide in Davenport entered pleas of not guilty last week. Adriana Blake and Devon Brait each pleaded not guilty to numerous charges, including 2 counts of first-degree murder in the January 15 slayings of Brian L. Goodwin and Amy M. Smith. Blake and Brett have their first pretrial conference scheduled for 1 p.m. April 12th, with the trial slated to start April 22nd. Along with the 2 counts of first-degree murder, they each also face charges of 2 counts of first-degree robbery, 2 counts of assault while participating in a felony serious injury, 2 counts of going armed with intent, 2 counts of use of dangerous weapons in commission of a crime, 2 counts of abuse of a corpse, 1 count of first-degree arson, 1 count of dominion and or control of firearm and or offensive weapon by a felon, 1 count of possession of methamphetamine. In Blake's case, it is listed as her 2nd such offense. For Brett, it was listed as his 3rd or subsequent offense. Another woman who was also arrested in connection with the case, Melissa Marie Weber, 49, is charged with two counts of abuse of a corpse and one count each of accessory after the fact and second degree arson. She pleaded not guilty to all charges and is slated to next appear in court on March 28. Blake, 27, of Davenport, is now representing private attorney Alex J. Gilmore of the West Des Moines-based F.M. Brown law firm. She had been represented by Troy Smith and Leanna Stragel of the State Public Defender's Office. Smith and Stragel withdrew from the case last week after the Public Defender's Office found they had a conflict representing her. The petition to withdraw came one day after Blake affirmed to District Court Judge Stuart P. Werling that she wanted Smith and Stragel to represent her. In late February, she had written to the court and said she did not want to be represented by them. Blake, 34, is represented by Amy Kepis of Des Moines-based Special Defense Unit. Weber is represented by Bo A. Bergman, a private attorney. According to the arrest affidavit, Blake and Brett killed Goodwin and Smith between 4:30 and 7 a.m. on Monday, January 15. Blake and Brett were arrested for possessing firearms as felons on January 18 and were officially charged with the murders on February 7. Investigators say Blake and Braille possessed firearms during the commission of the crimes, and that when they were taken into custody on January 18, they had 4.3 grams of heroin and 11 grams of meth. The bodies of Goodwin and Smith, both 44, were found January 16 by Davenport firefighters after a fire was reported at Goodwin's residence at 5210 North Division Street. They had gunshot wounds. According to their arrest affidavits, Blake and Brett also lived at the residence. Under Iowa law, first-degree murder carries an automatic sentence of life in prison upon conviction. During their first court appearance on the murder charges on February 16, Davenport Police Investigator Brandon Askew testified that Blake was recorded on video in a hotel room in Galesburg, Illinois, bragging about killing two people. Askew also testified that Blake and Brett were in possession of the firearms believed to be used in the murders when they were arrested on January 18th. Authorities allege Blake and Brett, along with Weber, placed combustible materials inside the residence where the bodies of Goodwin and Smith were located. They set fire to the materials in the hopes of altering the crime scene, and fire damaged the bodies of Goodwin and Smith. After helping to start the fire, Weber helped Blake and Brett avoid apprehension, the affidavit said. Weber is being held in the Rock Island County Jail for Scott County. Pam?
Man charged with enticing a minor. A bluegrass man is facing a charge of enticement after he allegedly tried to hypnotize a victim on a school bus, Davenport police said. Nicholas Catero Munger, 30, is charged in Scott County District Court with one count of enticing a minor under the age of 13. The charge is a Class C felony under Iowa law and carries a prison sentence of 10 years. Munger is also charged with one count each of assault with intent to commit sexual abuse, sexual exploitation by a school employee, and indecent contact with a child. Each charge is an aggravated misdemeanor that carries a prison sentence of 2 years. He was taken into custody on Wednesday. According to the arrested affidavits and search warrants filed by Davenport Police Detectives Evan Obert and Sean Johnson, a woman called 911 on May 4, 2021, stating that her 12-year-old son was assaulted the previous day by a bus monitor while on the way to school. The woman stated that her son got on the school bus and was followed to the back of the bus by the monitor. While in the back of the bus, the monitor, who had been identified as Munger, sat in a seat in proximity to the child and stared at him, according to the district court documents. Munger later moved closer to the child and asked him if he had ever been hypnotized and what social media he used, court documents alleged. He attempted to hypnotize the boy and was touching his arms and legs. According to district court documents, during a post-Miranda interview with police, Munger admitted to trying to hypnotize the child on the bus and touching his shoulder, neck, and wrist. Munger also admitted to asking the victim if he is on social media and admitted to using various social media platforms. Police obtained search warrants for Munger's electronic devices, including his cell phone and computer, in connection with their investigation into the incident on the bus. During a review of the downloads, officers located one image of child pornography that was on three of Munger's devices, according to the district court documents. Munger was arrested August 3, 2023, on a charge of possessing a depiction of a minor in a sex act first offense. That charge is an aggravated misdemeanor that carries a prison sentence of 2 years. A hearing on a motion to suppress evidence in that case is scheduled for April 4th. During a first appearance on the new charges Thursday in Scott County District Court, Munger waived his right to a preliminary hearing. Magistrate Ryan Beckenbaugh scheduled Munger's arraignment in the case for April 4th. Munger was being held Thursday night in the Scott County Jail on a cash-only bond of $10,000.
From the Iowa State House, discipline procedures for polices could change. I'm not sure if that's really what it's supposed to say, but polices is the word they put in here. Written for us by Kayla McCullough of the Times. Des Moines, Iowa police officers would have more protections from losing their certification and from investigations under a bill Iowa House lawmakers advanced on Tuesday. The bill builds on the Back the Blue law lawmakers passed in 2021. That law penalized local governments that selectively enforced state or local laws and raised penalties for illegal protesting and rioting. The law, which lawmakers passed in response to large protests in the wake of the murder of George Floyd in 2020, prohibited cities, counties, and local law enforcement agencies from having policies that discouraged the enforcement of certain laws. The new bill, House Study Bill 738, was advanced unanimously by a three-member House subcommittee on Tuesday. It is eligible for a vote in the House Ways and Means Committee. The bill is supported by the Iowa chapter of the Fraternal Order of Police. Skylar Linkman, an attorney for the Iowa Fraternal Order of Police, said the 2021 law was initially inspired by issues on Iowa's college campuses, but university police were left out of the final bill. One of the issues that came up at that time was officers were being told they could not enforce state, local, or federal laws, he said. The problem was targeting the situation that was going on in our college campuses because of the unique environment that our law enforcement officers there have to enforce state and local laws. But lobbyists for the Iowa Board of Regents, which governs the three universities, have some doubts about the bill. Keith Saunders, a representative for the Board of Regents, said the university decided to pull officers back while protesters were spray-painting university buildings in 2020 out of concern for the officers' safety. We believe the language requiring our sworn police officers on all three campuses to enforce the law of Iowa is redundant, said Caroline Jensen, another Regents lobbyist. We believe we already do that and have the power to do that. The bill would narrow the situations in which the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy can revoke an officer's certification and give the academy the discretion to privately discipline an officer for misconduct. Current law says that the State Law Enforcement Academy must decertify an officer who is fired for serious misconduct, which is defined as improper or illegal actions in connection with the officer's duties. What is improper? That is very subjective, and frankly, folks have weaponized the processes to try to go after police officer certification, not only here in Iowa, but across the country, Limekin said. The Academy does have the option to revoke an officer's certification in some cases without the officer having committed an illegal act. The bill would also allow the Academy to, in those cases, privately reprimand an officer or agency without a public revocation or suspension of their certification. Brady Carney, the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy director, said the rules would create additional cost and work for the academy, and that giving the academy the authority to punish police agencies would go beyond its current charge. He also said the bill would make it harder for the academy to enforce its certification process, shifting more of the responsibility onto the local agencies. This bill specifically makes it harder to appropriately deal with bad actors in law enforcement, he said. The Academy Council is the entity that grants the certification. They grant a peace officer certification in the state of Iowa, and this bill puts a lot of responsibility, a lot of onus on the individual law enforcement agencies. The bill would alter how investigations into officer misconduct can be conducted by a law enforcement agency. Under the proposal, officers who are the subject of a complaint would have the right to receive a copy of the incident report and video or audio recordings related to the incident in question before being interviewed by internal investigators. Support for the provision was mixed among law enforcement at the meeting. Representatives for the Fraternal Order of Police said they supported the provision. They likened it to an officer reviewing body camera footage before testifying in a civil or criminal court case. Dennis McDaniel, the police chief in Johnston and president of the Iowa Police Chiefs Association, said that in some of the department's more serious investigations, like an officer-involved shooting, conducting interviews before officers review footage can be important in determining the facts. We have to get into the legal balancing act of that officer making an independent statement, being involved in that or other officers that were witness to that, and the potential for them to offer testimony that might be altered based on reviewing the report, reviewing the video, he said.
Name a Bettendorf recycling truck. The city of Bettendorf is asking residents for help naming its recycling truck. Residents can suggest a name online at www.bettendorf.org/namingcontest by April 18. On that day, the city will launch a poll for people to vote on their favorite name. The winning name will be revealed at the city's annual Pacific Works Day event on May 18. The event will be from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Bettendorf Public Works Annex, 4403 Devil's Glen Road, according to a news release from the city. There will be free food and family-friendly activities, the release stated, including an inflatable obstacle course, snowplow blade painting, and face painting. The event is also set to have giveaways of compost, bat houses, trash, and yard waste stickers, and a free bus pass. And there will be educational activities like making milkweed pods and learning about hazardous materials and e-waste.
Thank you, Pam. Well, the S&P 500 rises to a record. Stan Cho of the Associated Press wrote this for us. New York, the S&P 500 rose to a record Tuesday as Wall Street made some of its final moves before hearing what the Federal Reserve will do with interest rates. The benchmark index rose 29.99 points or 0.6% to a 5,178.51 and topped its all-time high set last week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped 320.33 points or 0.8% to 39,110.76, and the NASDAQ Composite gained 63.34 points or 0.4% to 16,166.79. All three indices erased losses from earlier in the day to climb. International paper rose 11% for the biggest gain in the S&P 500 after it named Andrew Silverneil, an executive at investment company KKR, as its new CEO. Chairs of Unilever that trade in the United States added 2.8% after it said it was spinning off Ben & Jerry's and its ice cream business while cutting 7,500 jobs. NVIDIA swung through the day and went from one of the heaviest weights on the market to one of its strongest propellants. Its massive size gives it outside sway on indices, and it went from the loss of nearly 4% to a gain of 1.1%. Its stock already more than tripled over the last 12 months because of the frenzy around artificial intelligence technology. On the losing end of Wall Street was Super Microcomputer, whose stock earlier zoomed from less than $100 to more than $1,000 in a year. The seller of server and storage systems used in AI and other computing sank 9% after it said it's looking to sell 2 million shares of its stock. The Fed began its latest meeting on interest rates and will announce its decision on Wednesday. The widespread expectation is for it to leave its main interest rate alone at a two-decade high. The hope is that it will indicate it still expects to cut rates three times later this year, as it hinted a few months ago. Treasury yields eased in the bond market ahead of Wednesday's announcement. The yield on the 10-year Treasury slipped to a 4.29% from 4.33% late Monday. Bam.
To the opinion section. Turning now to the obituary section, here are the pending services. John Pat Stromberg, 91 of Rock Island, passed away Saturday, March 16th at his home. Arrangements are pending at Whelan Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory, Rock Island. James H. Nestler, 93, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Wednesday, March 13th at his home. Arrangements, Willie Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory, Rock Island. Michael P. Maxwell, 64, of Davenport, died Monday, March 18th at Aspire of Pleasant Valley. Cremation will be directed by the Cremation Society of the Quad Cities. Carl Dean Harris, 64, Bettendorf, passed away on Saturday, March 16th at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Iowa City, Iowa. Services are pending at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home, Bettendorf, Iowa. Virginia L. Williams, 85, of East Moline, died Tuesday, March 19, at Generations at Rock Island. Funeral arrangements are pending at Trimble Funeral Home and Crematory, Moline. Pamela J. Davis, age 73, of Davenport, passed away on March 18 at Jenison Medical Center, East Campus. Arrangements are pending at Halligan McCabe DeVries Funeral Home in Davenport.
From Rock Island, Robert F. Schalk, Sr., April 7, 1928 to March 17th. Robert F. Schalk, Sr., 95, of Rock Island, passed away Sunday, March 17th at Friendship Manor, Rock Island. A memorial visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 22nd at Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory in Milan. Memorials may be left in Robert's name, to the Quad City Animal Welfare Center in Milan. Private interment will be held in Andalusia Cemetery. Robert was born on April 7, 1928, in Quincy, the son of Frank and Catherine Schalk. He married Fern Frank on January 17, 1951, in Swedona Lutheran Church. He had been employed as a machinist at Eagle Signal for 27 years and later worked at the Rock Island Arsenal until his retirement. Robert was a United States Navy veteran, having served at the end of World War II. Robert had attended St. Pius X Catholic Church, Rock Island, and belonged to several square dancing groups through the years. Robert loved fishing, boating on the Mississippi River, square dancing, bicycling, and traveling the country with his wife, Fern. Survivors include his daughter, Diana Schalk, son, Robert Schalk, daughter-in-law, Brenda, grandchildren. Looks like there are a number of them. And he was preceded in death by his wife, Fern, son, Michael Schalk, sisters Millie Forrester, Carlene Adams, brothers Art Schalk, Joe Schalk, and Frank Schalk. Online condolences may be left for the family at WhelanPresley.com.
Here, turning to the opinion section of the Quad City Times, here are a couple letters to the editor. Are embryos given Social Security numbers? If embryos are declared people, are they now to be given Social Security numbers? Just wondering. And that letter came from Marilyn Whitaker of Eldridge. This next letter is entitled, How Can People Believe What Anything Trump Says? Wah, wah, wah. Once again, someone, in this case John O'Shea, February 29 column, feels the need to defend and support Donnie. Once again, everyone is picking on poor Donnie. I'm not quite certain how his supporters can take anything coming out of his mouth as relevant or even sensical. Making up derogatory nicknames for anyone who doesn't agree with him, the only thing I can figure is his followers think he is being clever and witty, just like 10-year-old bullies find support and encouragement because they are afraid of retribution if they don't support him or her. They are scared they might be the next target of his attacks. Continue on supporting the filthy rich, conservative, racist billionaires who continue to grossly under-contribute their fair share. I'm certain that O'Shea believes that 70% of this population that barely lives above the poverty level and are all out to get the rich and those who were fortunate enough to and able to attend law school. Thank you and Donnie for your service to our country. Not with a weapon, but with a dribble and a gavel. Ha! Signed by John A. Rogers of Rock Island. And I'll just read one more. Texas, Florida governors transporting criminals across state lines. It is common knowledge that the Republican governors of Florida and Texas have accused the Biden administration of allowing criminals and drug dealers to enter our United States. It is also common knowledge that these two governors have shipped hundreds and hundreds of these immigrants to cities such as Chicago and New York. A certain number of these immigrants by these two governors' reasoning are criminals. Therefore, it is logic that these same governors are guilty of criminal enterprise for facilitating these criminals to travel across the United States to pursue criminal acts. It appears that the Attorney General of New York and Illinois would have legal presence to file complicity charges against said governors to stop such busing. Signed by Stan Schwen of Davenport.
Thank you, Pam. There's an article here about farmers and farming. Congress must empower Iowa farmers to feed nation and steward planet. The Midwest is home to heartland states that are critical to putting food on the tables of Americans, and the Hawkeye State is certainly no exception. Farming is a fundamental part of life in Iowa, and the state's fertile land and favorable climate have allowed its agriculture sector to prosper and, as a result, benefit Iowa's economy and play a critical role in feeding the nation. As of 2022, there were more than 84,000 Iowa farming businesses operating across more than 30 million acres, which accounts for more than 90% of the state. According to a report from the same year, nearly 800,000 Iowa jobs can be attributed to the food and agriculture sector, and the industry is also responsible for $96.5 billion of direct economic output in the state. While it is home to less than 1% of the U.S. population, Iowa produces nearly 10% of the nation's food supply and is the largest producer of corn, pork, and eggs. Iowa not only leads in agricultural production, it also leads in innovation and sustainability, and Iowa farmers take pride in being good stewards of their land and of the environment. This includes the implementation of conservation practices such as no-till farming and cover cropping, which provide benefits like reduced soil erosion and improved soil health. These practices are not only environmentally responsible, but also proven to help farmers maintain the long-term productivity of their land. Many of these conservation practices are made possible through voluntary conservation programs offered by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. These voluntary programs provide financial and technical assistance to farmers who adopt or maintain conservation practices on working lands actively in production, as well as programs that provide easements to remove land from production. The most popular among both types of programs are the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, the Conservation Stewardship Program, and the Conservation Reserve Program. This funding has been well utilized by farmers nationwide, but especially by Iowans. These programs have typically had limited funding, even with very high demand. EQIP and CSP received nearly 115,000 combined applications in 2021, but were only able to fund a third of the applicants, and many projects that meet the government's requirements have been going unfunded for years. For example, less than 20% of EQIP applicants in Iowa received funding in 2022. As a result of the high demand and proven benefits associated with the conservation programs, they received an influx of an additional $19.5 billion in 2022 to be spread out over 5 years to support the conservation programs that yield climate change mitigation benefits, practices we know benefit overall productivity. While some conservatives in Congress have goals to slash this funding and potentially remove any climate language from the program goals, the support and demand for these programs should be a sign to congressional Republicans that this funding is necessary to help farmers meet both their conservation and productivity goals. To shed more light on the deep support these programs have, polling conducted by ACC Action shows that 89% of Iowa voters understand the role farmers play in environmental stewardship and want to continue investing in the programs that enable them to do so. Iowans also don't shy away from seeing the agricultural community as climate champions, with 78% agreeing that Iowa's farms, ranches, and forests can be an important part of the solution to climate change by naturally removing carbon dioxide from the air. To put it simply, the voluntary conservation programs in the Farm Bill are both good for the planet and good for Iowans, and Congress must act to preserve their accessibility through the 2024 Farm Bill. Now, Austin Harris represents Iowa's 26th district in the Iowa State House, and he's a lifelong Iowan and works his family's farm. Morgan Gruntman is the Government Affairs Director at the American Conservation Coalition Action. And those are the two people, Austin Harris and Morgan Brumman, who wrote this article.
Turning now to the sports section of the Quad City Times, here's an article about the Iowa Hawkeyes. Hawkeyes top K-State in NIT opener. Sanford nets 30 points in win. With Caitlin Clark sitting in the stands, the Iowa Hawkeyes opened the first round of the National Invitation Tournament with a 91-82 win over the Kansas State Wildcats at Carver Hawkeye Arena on Tuesday night. Peyton Sanford led the way for the Hawkeyes with a season-high 30 points on 9 of 14 shooting, including a season-best 7-for-11 from beyond the arc in the wire-to-wire victory. The win means the third-seeded Hawkeyes, who are 19-14, will face either second-seeded Utah, who is also 19-14, or the unranked University of California Irvine Anteaters, 24-9. Either on Saturday or Sunday in the second round of the NIT. The Hawkeyes, with Sanford, at the helm, started strong. The 6'7" junior nailed 2 3-pointers within the first minute and was a perfect 4-for-4 with 17 points within the first 8 minutes of the first half. With the hot shooting from Sanford, Iowa was able to build a 24-14 lead at the under-12 media timeout. That lead grew to a first-half best 13-point difference, 41-28, following two free throws by Joss Dix right after the under-4 media timeout. Former Moline forward and Big Ten Freshman of the Year Owen Freeman contributed with 10 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 block shots. Defensively, Iowa put the clamps on the Wildcats. In the first half, Kansas State was a woeful 4-for-19 from beyond the arc, with senior guard Tyler Perry shooting 2-of-9 from long range. At halftime, no Wildcats player had more than 7 points. The start of the second half was a different story for Kansas State, knowing that their season was on the line. They opened the half on a 7-2 run, capped by Dai Ames' 3-pointer to cut the double-digit lead down to just one possession game at 52-49 with 17 minutes and 23 seconds left. However, the Hawkeyes responded, countering with a 17-4 run to widen the lead back to 13, 69-56, with just under 14 minutes remaining. 5 different Hawkeyes, including Freeman and Sanford, contributed to the scoring column during the run. Ames continued to be a one-man wrecking machine for Kansas State, as his corner three again chopped the Iowa lead to just 4 points, 74-70. Ames was 6-from-8 from the field and 4-from-5 from 3-point at that point. Iowa forward Ben Kreike then took center stage. The senior was just 1-of-4 in the first half, but had a monster second half, 8-for-11. His lone three-pointer from the baseline extended the Iowa lead back once again to double digits, 84-74, with 3 minutes and 49 seconds left. He then chased down a loose ball, heading into the first row of photographers, and Sanford then nailed his seventh three of the game from the left baseline, giving the Hawkeyes an 87-76 lead with just under 3 minutes left in regulation. Crikey's 24 points and 11 rebounds were each a point and rebound away from tying the season highs for the senior.
Thanks, Pam. Clark moving the betting needle. There's a photograph above the article. It's a really good picture of Caitlin Clark sitting in the middle of a row of young ladies. Obviously, those are team members. Caitlin Clark watches Selection Sunday with her Iowa teammates at Carver Hawkeye Arena on Sunday. Clark is smiling. This article was written by Mark Anderson. He's an AP sports writer. Las Vegas. Caitlin Clark's audacious logo, three-pointers, and record-breaking accomplishments have driven sports fans who previously wouldn't walk across the street to watch women's basketball to set their DVRs for Iowa games. Bettors have taken an interest, too, using some of their discretionary money on Clark and the Hawkeyes, the top seed in the Albany Regional 2 of the NCAA tournament. Iowa plays Holy Cross or UT Martin in the first round Saturday. Caesars Sportsbook reported the number of bets on women's college basketball games this season compared to a year ago was 190% higher, with 153% more money wagered. We saw the momentum slowly build toward the end of the regular season last year and then into the tournament, said Grant Tucker, who heads up college basketball trading for Caesars. Obviously, Iowa had that great run all the way to the final. So as the tournament went on along, the betting increased. Her superstardom grew. It was all tied perfectly in when you think of name, image, and likeness, and all the stuff going on. We really have never seen a college athlete like this, especially in the women's game in any sport. Caesars and BetMGM plan to offer proposition bets around Clark, and her popularity has created a spillover effect for others' women's basketball teams. Tucker said Caesars has gone from posting 4 or 5 women's games on any given day to 12 to 15. She also has affected future bets with Iowa going from 12-1 at Caesars to win the national championship to 6-1 because of the money from casual gamblers. The pros haven't jumped in, preferring to stick with South Carolina, which is a minus 135 favorite. I think what's great about Caitlin Clark is it's changed a little bit the dynamics of college basketball, said Derek Stevens, owner of several downtown Las Vegas casinos, including Circa. The interest in women's college basketball has definitely taken a big upturn in the last two seasons, and Iowa and Caitlin Clark is the reason. I think it's something that's fun. People are liking it. We're showing it inside Circa Las Vegas, so it's pretty awesome to see how this has developed. Sheldon Jacobson, who operates the site Bracket Odds, said brackets remain enormously, I'm sorry, I have lost my place. Doing a lot of that today. More popular for the men's tournament at a 60-1 ratio, but Clark has created more interest for the women. When you have Caitlin Clark playing, the longer the Iowa Hawkeyes survive, the more interest there will be, Jacobson said. She's become a rock star among the women's basketball players, and that's great for the game. It's great for the sport, and I hope it continues. Certainly, she'll be greatly missed when she finishes her career in just a few weeks, which leaves women's college basketball at a little bit of a crossroads. Clark will be a difficult act to follow, though USC freshman Juju Watkins is showing she might have the game to do just that. It's more than just play, it's also personality, Jacobson said. It's really the whole gestalt. Clark really brings something special to the game. I intentionally watched some of the games on TV when she was playing, just because she was so interesting to watch. She brings something special to the game, and that's great for the sport. Tucker said he expects some regression in interest when Clark heads to the WNBA after this season, but her departure won't completely stall the momentum for college women's basketball. Her stardom is very unique, Tucker said. NIL is here to stay. There are more stars to come, but I don't know if anybody can really be at the level of Caitlin Clark. I wouldn't say it would go down to how it was 4 or 5 years ago, but I don't know if this is really sustainable long term.
Here is some news from the NHL. Scheifele scores hat trick and Jets win. Associated Press. Mark Scheifele scored 3 goals. Connor Hellebuyck made 40 saves, and the Winnipeg Jets beat the New York Rangers 4-2. It was the 8th hat trick of Scheifele's career. Kyle Connor also scored for the Jets, who have won for 3 straight and 4 of their last 5. Winnipeg is 14-5 and no ties since February 8, and 19-5 and 4 ties against the Eastern Conference this season. The Red Wings 4, the Blue Jackets 3 in overtime. Patrick Kane scored 48 seconds into overtime as host Detroit rallied to beat Columbus. Kane scored from the left circle after Lucas Raymond tied the score with his 2nd goal of the game with 12.6 seconds remaining in regulation. Moritz Seider had the other goal for Detroit, which had lost 8 of its previous 9 games. Bruins 6, Senators 2. David Pasternak scored 2 goals less than 3 minutes apart in the first period, then completed the hat trick in the third to lead host Boston past Ottawa. Pasternak picked up his 17th regular season hat trick and passed team president Cam Neely for number 7 on the Bruins' all-time scoring list with 345 career goals. Justin Brazeau scored twice. Jesper Bukvist had a goal, and Kevin Shattenkirk had 3 assists as the Bruins won their 3rd straight. Devils 5, Penguins 2. Jake Allen made 36 saves, and Timo Meier and Dawson Mercer each scored twice to lead host New Jersey over Pittsburgh. The Devils won for the 3rd time in 8 games under interim coach Travis Jean. Flyers 4, Maple Leafs 3. Owen Tippett scored 19 seconds into the game and added an assist, and Morgan Frost had a goal and an assist as Philadelphia beat visiting Toronto. Hurricanes 4, Islanders 1. Seth Jarvis scored twice, and visiting Carolina raced through a 3-goal lead in the first period on the way to win over New York. Trade deadline acquisition Jake Gunzel had a goal and 2 assists for Carolina. Predators 8, Sharks 2. Michael McCarron scored 2 goals. Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg each had a goal and 2 assists, and host Nashville beat San Jose, extending the team's point streak to a franchise record 15 games. Avalanche 4, Blues 3. Mikko Rantanen netted his 7th career hat trick to lead the surging Colorado past host St. Louis. Rantanen has 37 goals this season and 14 points in his last six games.
Thank you, Pam. And that brings us to the end of the Quad City Times for today. I'm Patty Daniels, and my partner at the microphone is Pam Rhodes. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.